Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
Hey everyone, thanks for tuning into Power Athlete Radio, featuring The Crew. Where a former pro football player and a D3 All-Star use strength and conditioning as an excuse to talk about anything but. Now here's John and Tex.
So, you're going to laugh at this. I think I told you guys, Killy had a project where she had to go through and do some Ancestry.com. Mm-hmm. So she only went like, she basically went one generation back. And then she dumped it on my lap like, hey, Dad, can you figure this out? And you know I'm a psycho.
She just wrote down her parents' names?
Yeah. That's about all she did. And she's like, hey, Dad, can you help me with this? And it was like, you know, this is a couple weeks ago. It was like a Friday night at about like 6 o'clock. Oh. And she's like, I'm like, well, when's this due? She's like, I got to have it due for Monday. And I'm like, how far are you supposed to go back? She's like, well, they want us to do a detailed job. Okay. So I fired it up. I got her back to like the 1600s on everybody's side. Like I basically stayed up real late on Friday and all day Saturday, Sunday night, and got it all done. So we have, but there was, it answered a bunch of questions that I just, like things I was told just weren't true by my family. So come to find out that when my grandfather in World War One, he and his brother were sent, my great-grandmother passed away. They were living in the tunnels while the Germans were bombing World War One. So they put all the kids on boats and sent them to Western Canada as orphans. So my great-grandfather stayed. My grandfather and his brother went, and then his other brother was serving the war, met them later. But they were like living in like Birmingham and like they were Liverpool and like these areas. And so about that time, I was talking to Harry about some of those areas, and Harry's like, oh, you should watch Peaky Blinders. And that takes place in Birmingham and London and all those areas, right about that time, like right after, you know, like 1919, 1920. So I started watching that show. I don't know if you guys have seen it. It's fucking awesome. It's a pretty damn good show. But it just makes me realize exactly how fucking soft we are as people. Like, I know it's a fictitious show and it didn't really happen. But like, if it's historically accurate in any way, holy shit. Like the one, like the women are pregnant. The one chick smoking, she's totally doing coke. Like they were calling it like Tokyo, and like they're basically doing a bunch of coke. She's like, oh yeah, it makes me feel like I'm, you know, having a good day. Like these people get their ass kicked. Like it's a fucking super violent show, but just like person just randomly dies, like gets hit by something, and they just kind of sweep him like, oh, he's dead. Like it just goes to show you, like, and I said to Harry, I was like, man, it made me realize, like, if that show's historically accurate in any way, how soft we are. Harry's like, oh, yeah, like, the best ass whooping I've had is if I got some rough toilet paper. And I fucking laughed. He's like how far we've come. Like, these dudes are like, I mean, it's a pretty good show. Like, I don't want to ruin it for you guys, but, man, it's violent. It's got a ton of plot. Like, I think it's cool as shit. But so yesterday, I took the kids to go get lunch. And I knew that the Chiefs game was starting late, or was starting at 2 o'clock, and I knew we weren't going to back in time. So I went to record it, and I got home and wasn't in a rush. So I was about an hour behind when we started. Incredible game. I was stoked to watch it. But as I'm in the third quarter and the Chiefs are still in control of the game, I get a text message from Luke. How many cheeseburgers is Andy Reid gonna need to eat to drown his sorrows? And I was like, fuck. So I text him back. I'm like, you know, I started late. I'm only in the third quarter. He totally ruined it for me. And he was like, yes. As many times as I've ruined everything for him as being the spoiler, the fact that he had the wherewithal to try to spoil it on me was fucking awesome.
And it was unintentional too, which makes it even better.
I proceeded to watch the game anyway, and I was totally happy to know that Joe Burrow and the Bengals are going to the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Big dick energy. Refuse to lose.
That kid put that entire team on his back and marched him down. Dude, his offensive line is not good. Like the amount of pressure, I mean, that kid was like, he had running out of the pocket collapses, running for 18 yards, knows where the first down is, wherewithal, and his ability to move on the field and kind of command everything. Huge respect for that kid, man. I mean, taking a team that was absolute fucking garbage and putting him on his back and getting the
30 years.
Dude, you guys heard me make jokes about fucking playing for the Bengals or Cleveland being like the last stop on your way to fucking purgatory. And they get Joe Burrow. And in his second year to have a first, like have a kid of that caliber in his second year after coming off an injury, because didn't he get blew out his knee in his first year?
Yes, last ACL. Year.
Yeah, last year. Coming back, like, dude, I'll forever be a Tom Brady fan. I hope, I wish he'd walked away last year. Win the Super Bowl right off into the sunset. He came back this year. That whole AB thing and all that bullshit that team was going through, he didn't deserve that in his last year. Maybe he was an orchestrator in it, but like that guy deserves to roll out like Peyton Manning on a fucking on a win. So I have a hard time seeing Tom Brady hanging it up. And I saw that he retired, but then his dad came back and said no, and it hasn't been confirmed. So I mean, there's a little controversy there. Do I see him retiring? No. I don't see him going out on that.
Well, hold on. So this is what we can really get into now.
I was trying to get to this, but it takes a minute to get there.
Jennifer Aniston, cocaine, Tom Brady, Adam Schefter.
Yeah.
I get how your mind works.
As you know, it takes me a little bit to get places. You know, you're just Mr. Obvious. Just jump right in. I like to, weasel Captain my way in the back door.
A little foreplay.
Here's what I like.
I like to Rick James your face.
Tom Brady decides to retire, but then wants to be the one to break the news. Adam Schefter, being the little worm, breaks the news.
How did he know?
Tom Brady, I think, is going to come back as a spite season so he can be the one to control his own destiny, not the worm.
I firmly agree with you.
Spite season.
Dude, let me tell you, like the one thing Tom Brady is going out on, I mean, he's going to play Sinatra's My Way. Like, he wants to go out. I think the problem, though, is he needs to hang back. He needs to see what money they have in the cap, because I know that they're going to have some financial issues. They spent a lot to try to get this team back together. So I'm interested to see what happens with the cap and the spending. And he probably is just going to hang out and see what happens. And if they're able to bring back the people and they're able to put players around him that are going to put him in a situation where he can potentially get back to the Super Bowl, I think he comes back. I think if they don't, I think he's fucking done.
Or Jimmy Garoppolo is out in San Francisco. Tom Brady, enter him into that whole scenario where you got some awesome ballers and one hell of a defense. The only key link they're missing, quarterback. So he replaces Garoppolo again.
First of all, that would never happen because the Niners have thwarted him twice. They spited him. Mariucci spited him, didn't draft him the first time out. And then in free agency, he wanted to go there, and they weren't interested.
Well, free agency way back, I think it was a West Coast, East Coast kids thing.
Well,
he flew back every...
Yeah, well, he's a West Coast kid. But, you know, and the best is he called Mariucci out on it. Mariucci's such a fucking worm. He was like, oh, you know, we brought in all these kids and, you know, we were looking for a West Coast guy and Tom really wasn't the guy we were looking for. And Mariucci was giving every excuse on the fact that his ability to evaluate talent wasn't the fucking reason. And if Mariucci was such a good fucking coach, why has he been in the fucking announcer's booth for the last 20 years?
Well, he's on commercials now too.
Dude.
Know your limits.
Well, I mean.
That's the rules.
But I mean, look at Cowher and those guys. So Cowher went out on a Super Bowl. What did Mariucci go out on? Detroit
Water
Lions.
Pump. Water pump.
Yeah, bullshitter. Okay. And I like Mooch. But and the best is I when I saw him at Tony's Hall of Fame, we were fucking busted balls. And I was like, hey, coach, it's so good to see you. I'm really glad that you really made your name in the fucking booth. And he was like, fuck you, Wellborn. And I'm like, yeah, dude, I wish I was in the booth with you. But, you know, I see how it goes. But like, so the issue comes down to I think Brady wants to control his own narrative. I firmly agree, but I think he's going to hang back. But the problem, though, is like as a dude with that much bravado and ego and all this, you know, wrapped up in him, like he can't let Peyton Manning go out like he, you know, Peyton got a chance to literally win the Super Bowl and ride out on the fucking, you know, on the, you know, on the
last
parade.
Leg. Because part of that season, he got benched for Brock Osweiler, who sucks ass.
Yeah.
As a Houston Texans fan, I could say that.
Yeah.
Man got paid though, so good on his agent. But
well, he, you know, he got paid in Papa John's.
Peyton Manning, not yeah. Brock. Brock got cold hard cash from Houston, and then let's
see. Yeah, he was awful. Well, no, part of Peyton's deal was he got Papa John's. I think he got 40 Papa John's.
Well, weren't you the one that said he's going to buy the Broncos with Elway and Eli?
No, so he and his brother, I think, put together a thing, and I'm interested to see if they include John Elway in that deal. I know Elway was kind of lobbying to get in on that, but I could very well see the Peyton, Peyton and his brother being like, "Fuck you." Which,
Cooper also on commercials, hilarious.
Peyton is as funny an individual as you see on TV, and he's really taken this whole thing. Like, I don't know, did you see his whole bowling thing commercial for the Super Bowl?
Uh-huh.
He's a funny dude, man. I mean, and just. Natural good for this. So I'm stoked for him. But I think the Tom Brady thing is extremely interesting. I just like when I saw it break, and what's wild is that his TB12 Instagram, which I'm sure is not run by him, was like, you know, thank you so much for all you've done. So what I'm thinking happened is that they saw it break and were late to it and basically put out that tweet because it ended up getting deleted later on.
Well, Schefter, I think he just wants to see his name on the bottom line.
You think Schefter, how did he score that information, or you think he just did it just to make it up?
This I don't know. I was lacrosse tournament and all the kids were like, bah, bah, breaking news, bah. So I heard from them because they're all on their phones but that's a whole different story. The
that's why you guys lost.
Like, get off your fucking phones.
They want that.
Like, pick up your fucking skateboard.
Yeah. Kids, old man yells at cloud.
I think Tom is going to be, or you know what? I mean, the best thing to do if he retired, go sign with the Patriots for a 10-day contract and retire as a Patriot. But I don't know, man. I mean, I can't really see him. What's he going to? I mean, he had some really interesting cryptic things about
crypto, you know, literally.
Well, yeah, he's doing the crypto thing, but. Talking about being a father and wanting to be around his kids more and this, and it's more important. And I'm like, dude, I like, it's going to be tough.
Yeah. 45 is a nice round number.
I think he could come back and do it. I mean, he could still play at a high level. He's still one of the best.
He's got the body for it too.
Yeah. I mean, whatever he's doing, he's fucking doing it right.
Well, it's all Giselle.
You think?
Superpower energy. Oh yeah.
She got that big dick energy just bleeding on him, that fucking Joe Burrow. But what I was saying was, it's pretty interesting that you have a guy like Brady who at the end of his career with the NFL, I mean, the best to ever do the game. And I hate that term where people are like, the GOAT, like the greatest of all time. It's,
you know, who invented that, right?
Wasn't it Charles Barkley?
No, LL Cool J.
Oh, was it LL Cool J?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
All right. Who also wrote probably one of the greatest lines in rap history?
Lay it on us.
Hot sex on a platter. Right? In his song, doing it well, that deal. And he goes, hot sex on a platter. To this day, my favorite line in any rap song. Like the fact that he worked hot sex on a platter into a song, I'm a fucking big fan. Too Short didn't do that. So you have Tom Brady at the end of his career coming out, you know, this whole deal. And you have a kid like a Joe Burrow. It's so interesting when like one door closes, another one open, and you have this kid show up, all coming off an injury, number one pick overall. I mean, like, you know, has this, you know, LSU deal and goes in and like flashes of greatness. It almost makes you think like, man, like, you know, is this the heir apparent? You know, and you know, Mahomes is a great quarterback. So, I mean, that kid has proven it over and over again. But I'll tell you, I was really impressed by seeing Joe Burrow play.
And he's got the chance to become the first person to win the Heisman, a national title, and a Super Bowl. There's never been anybody else to do that.
I am not a Sean McVay fan, and I'm not a Rams fan. My granddad was a Rams fan. I'm rooting for the Bengals in this one. Hmm. Even though I'm from LA.
Yeah, I'm all about Bengals in this one too, just solely off the BDE.
But I'll tell you this. Matthew Stafford lived in purgatory playing for the fucking Detroit Lions for all those years and almost saw his career go the way of Megatron and Barry Sanders, where he had to retire in this fucking anonymity. And he got thrown a huge lifeline where they pulled him out. And what's wild is that the Rams looked and thought, you know, we're one player away. We could trade quarterbacks, get rid of Goff, and bring this dude in. We could go to the Super Bowl. They were right.
Not just one player.
No, they brought in
Von Miller.
They also brought in who had to leave Cleveland after that. You know, he was that podcast where the chick talked about him like getting a dump taken on his chest.
Father was tweeting on his behalf, and you can't mend that relationship with your quarterback. I'm just not a fan of the all-star teams. I think the Rams went too hard in the NBA approach of just piecing together all-stars. The Yankee way, get out of here. Build your team the Bengal way.
Through the draft.
Well, get lucky.
So they got.
It only took 30 years.
Yeah, they got Von Miller. I mean, who else they got? They got Donaldson. They got stacked defense.
Donald.
Yeah, not Donaldson. And then they have, they got good receivers. That was a stupid play that kid had with the late hit Odell Beckham Jr. was going down.
Head-to-head.
Yeah, that was stupid. And, dude, he came out today and was, you know, but that dude was in his ear the entire time talking shit to him.
But that's part of the
game. That's part of his game and getting him to do something stupid.
Well, there was the dropped interception. Essentially, the championship was dropped in that interception.
That was another good game. So it's been pretty amazing because for the most part, usually the most exciting games are the wild card games. And then you get to the divisionals and then, like, you know, they're usually all right. And then, like, you know, the championship games are usually and the Super Bowl is like, but I mean, the last 2 weeks, football has been unbelievable. Mm-hmm. The Buffalo game was unreal.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden now you have the Chiefs go into overtime twice. They both, you know, the first time they win it, they go right down. You know, the Buffalo doesn't play defense. They score a touchdown.
Yeah, Buffalo, terrible defense.
But then you watch this game. All of a sudden, you know, now you have the Bengals bowing up. Charles. Oh, fucking Buffalo. I mean, what's amazing? And I'll tell you, I'm a Buffalo fan. I mean, I like Josh Allen, and I'm even bigger fan of Mini Reed, their head coach.
McDermott.
Yeah, Sean McDermott, a.k.a. Mini Reed, as we used to call him. He was Andy Reid's, basically, lapdog. He had to basically feed Andy and get Andy's food for him when I was a rookie or my first couple years in the NFL. And that dude went from basically having to be Andy Reid's personal meal service delivery to being a badass head coach. I mean, Spags, you know, another great coach. So, I mean, no, it's cool to see. But, yeah, man, I was bummed for Josh Allen. I would have loved to have seen Buffalo. And just to talk Charles off the ledge. You know,
but now he's just talking for closer to it.
Look, he's so mad over there. Look at him. He's just hands in his pockets, feet jiggling. He's like, fucking assholes. He's like, I'm totally going to Photoshop a dick in this. He's like, he single slice, like in Fight Club, where he's like, he single sliced a single frame of pornography into child's film.
Well, that's the Buffalo way because they throw dildos onto the field when it's not going their way.
Oh, really?
Charles, confirm.
I think it was a purple dildo.
Charles, as a Bills fan, you go through security. Like, what is there signage up? Please, no dildos. Are they patting you down looking for extra?
They're actually.
It's all me.
No. They're like, you can leave your. You can bring your dildos. Don't bring your dildos. Dude, how great is that? They're like, you know what? I'm just going to throw. Is that a face on the dildo right up there?
There's a lot of them.
Is there more than one dildo in there? That's fucking hilarious. Can you imagine just hucking dildos? It's so great.
What does it say?
Like, these are multiple games. Charles, don't tell us what you Googled to find this.
So multiple dildos went on the field?
It's a thing. And so Patriots.
What does it say on that one, Charles?
It's got a face.
Yeah.
Brady's.
Brady. Oh, God damn it. God damn it. You know, the internet and Buffalo fans are pretty fucking hilarious. But I am excited for the Super Bowl. I mean, this is like, it's been a long time since I've been excited for one. And just because I think you have like that stacked LA Lakers, they went out, they got all the free agents. And then you got this literally just young gunslinger, fucking Cool Joe, fucking Burrow rolling in, iced out, dude. That kid, I'm a fan. I like it. I hope he comes in and plays well. He doesn't seem like the type of person to get rattled with the pressure because he's played at a high level. Mm-hmm. But the problem is the people he has surrounding him are not.
But that's the quality. I mean, that's the representation of a leader. He will bring them up and so, allow them to play better than their.
Yeah, I mean, but like your high school, like you guys went up and played that big school up in Dallas. What was it called?
Dallas Jesuit.
I mean, but those kids, like going up there, that was like a big deal for them, right? Because you said those guys are like the top in the state. So I sometimes wonder that, like, you have a situation where the game's going to be in LA, so it's going to be star-studded. You're taking all these hayseeds out of Cincinnati and sending them out there. I'm just thinking,
but they're not from Cincinnati, and so there's other LSU championship Tigers on the team. So
Burrow's from Ohio.
I understand that. Yeah. So that's equal. But when he won the national championship with LSU, Cincinnati Bengals have since brought those more Tigers in.
Yeah, I saw the picture of the guy carrying him on the field.
Yeah,
LSU.
One of his linemen. His lineman. And then Chase, his wide receiver, who's amazing.
I'm rooting for him. Yeah. I mean, I'm rooting for the Bengals. It'd be great. I just think it's going to be tough to beat LA in LA. I mean, unless something great comes up.
They have no home field advantage.
Well, there's going to be a lot of celebrities there. Because, you know, celebrities only come out when they can get the other picture on camera. But what I'm really interested in is I hope that there's some really good podcasts that come out with more stories about Odell Beckham Jr. getting pooped on. That's why he had to leave Cleveland. He can't play for the Browns with that type of shit out there. Literally.
Yeah.
He sucks.
Yeah. I'd say I'm pulling more for the Bengals than rooting against the Rams, but I'm certainly
rooting against the Rams.
Yeah. Charles, can you take that picture down from the?
Yeah, it looks like a it looks like a young McQuilkin up there.
It's all wrinkly too.
It's all shaved balls,
real sturdy.
All right, so
we mentioned the tournament in which my lacrosse team is playing during
set
halftime,
the stage for us.
Yeah, okay. During halftime.
So just some young backwoods kids,
just
they get on a bus, kind of like what was the one where Gene Hackman, where they were basketball? What was
it's the same length?
Hoosiers.
I didn't measure the field.
So Hoosiers, they get on a bus from Dripping. The whole Dripping Springs town follows them in the bus to go up there while their lacrosse team takes on this Jesuit high school in Dallas.
The key point is. During halftime.
Did you measure the field?
No, I didn't. That's my first mistake.
Did you fucking not learn anything from Gene Hackman and Hoosiers?
It's 6 feet by 6 feet. It's the same goal. No, next time. I'm saving that. You can't just give your best pregame speeches that you stole from movies.
Wait,
every game.
Isn't that what?
Easy. So then.
Al Pacino, Any Giving Sunday.
Hold on.
Probably the best speech.
Ooh,
you get your
a whole
head
different conversation
straight up her ass.
Another time. God damn it.
This is what we do. We derail you.
Played during pregame and Led Zeppelin came on. It's Immigrant Song. So I'm like fucking charged up.
Yeah.
And one of the dudes next to me was like, ugh, what is this? So some 16-year-old kid didn't know who Led Zeppelin was and made the comment of, this is awful. And I'm like, first off, no. And then what did they share?
Travis Scott?
Travis Scott is their go-to hype music, and I'm like...
I don't even know who Travis Scott is.
Well,
rapper?
He's a rapper. He's not as talented as LL Cool J.
Well, I mean, is he as talented as Drake? Because I'll tell you, in the rap game, Drake has got the most credibility at this point of anybody.
I have no, why I'm the that? Wrong person.
He went and DM'd some Instagram model, showed up and banged her, took the condom off, went to the bathroom, put hot sauce in it, tied it up and threw it in the wastebasket. Then she went and recovered the condom and basically burned herself up inside because there was hot sauce in there, and then tried to sue Drake for basically burning her coochie to the ground. And she came out and sued him and said, and told this story that he, that she went and recovered the condom and tried to, like, you know, mainline turkey baster herself with it. And literally it was like she, her insides were on fire.
Talk about a hot rod.
First of all, Drake just came up massive in my book. That dude is so gangster. That's the most gangster move I've ever heard in my life. Good on him.
How did I miss that?
Dude, it was, why are you so upset? This is amazing. We've told this,
the joke.
This told this story before. It's you seem very upset by this.
No, I'm just.
Drake is gangster. I love him.
Yeah, we get it. I mean, started from the bottom and now he's here.
I'm really, I can't even tell you what any of his music is, but I'm a fan. LL Cool J, Hot Sex on a Platter.
Right. And we're joined by Matt Zanis, the foot guy.
Speaking of hot sex on the platter.
Dude.
And foot fetishes.
And foot fetishes.
And our question.
Okay, but one of the kids doesn't know who Led Zeppelin is. So at that point, I hope you just go and buy. Well, they don't have CDs anymore. These kids don't have CD players.
No. Well, hopefully Led Zeppelin doesn't pull themselves off Spotify. Let's say that. But
you really think Jimmy Page and those guys still own their collection?
No.
No. Yeah. Okay. So
anyway, a common thread throughout the team, because they're both in season for the sport and they're also off-season training. So they're double dipping in their performance. And a lot of the athletes are coming up with shin splints and questions about it. So
shin splints.
We got different – let's paint the picture. We got different surfaces that essentially they're using in different shoes. So we got – sprinting, whether it's on concrete or the ground or the track. And we have weightlifting, of course, getting some pressure in there. And then we got cleats on turf. So having some fun, all these different surfaces, different shoes, different things. And many of the dual sport are coming up with shin splints.
Are they really shin splints or are they just
categorized as shin splints?
Why is it, by when anybody has any tightness in their anterior tib, is it called a shin splint? Or is that how they're defined as shin splints?
Well, I think we have to create a definition first to get a better understanding.
I like it.
Let's start there. Yeah. So pain on the shin, as they've brought it up to different coaches and then bring these movement, training, pain questions to me. Mm-hmm. And so it's, hey, I have shin splints. That's how it's described and started with. And then going on through some exploring of what else is going on in their training.
Do you know what it reminds me of? When people got a little, so when we were at the gym, all of a sudden, like, we did a bunch of kettlebell swings and some stuff, and everybody started having a little bit of back tightness. So magically, one person went to a doctor who told them they had sciatica, and then everybody in the gym had sciatica because it was the easiest definition.
So contagious.
It was, to the point where I was like, don't sit on the floor, you're going to catch sciatica. So I think what happens a lot of times, and at least like shin splints is one of those things. I have seen people with shin splints. Mm-hmm. I've also seen people that are basically like don't have a ton of range of motion, especially dorsiflexion, a ton of running, and now all of a sudden they have that dynamic weighted and they start getting really tight anterior tibialis. And like, I think the anterior tib tightness in that isn't necessarily shin splints, because the shin splints is actually a fraying of the sheath.
Well, it's a pooling of the muscle on the periosteum of the bone, and it creates an inflammation in around that junction area, and that's technically what shin splints is and how it develops. But you mentioned the anterior tibialis. That's one form of shin splints. There's also the posterior tibialis, which is commonly referred to as medial tibial stress syndrome.
Okay.
So you have the muscle that comes along the inside area of the tibia and runs down along the ankle bone and inserts into the bottom of the foot. That muscle can also start to pull away at the bone as well. Or you could have it on the front of the shin, like you mentioned, the anterior tibialis. And then technically you can theoretically get it on the outside edge which is
it like apartment syndrome where they like start to get like swelling and fluid in it?
It can if it progresses that far. And I've seen it where it goes to that length, and then it becomes a real medical emergency because you have to go in there and get that shit drained.
Yeah.
And it's a nasty scar, dude. It's like railroad tracks. They have to like fillet you from the ankle all the way up to the knee.
So is it something that and like I've never had shin splints, but I've had the front of my knee or the front of my shins tight because I felt like I there's almost like a conditioning aspect where if you haven't done a ton of running, all of a sudden the front of your shins gets kind of tight in just kind of a deconditioned state. So can you get into a little understanding of like, is it something that once you get shin splints you have to deal with, or is there a training that allows you to avoid it? Because it feels like avoidance is a lot better than once you have it, fuck, now how do I get rid of it?
Yeah, it's always going to be easier to try and prevent it through training than to try and put out the fire when it actually happens. So you don't get behind the eight ball on it. But essentially the anterior tibialis and even the posterior tibialis, their main role functionally is as a brake. They're decelerators, right? So if you think about running and sprinting, they're essentially controlling your foot down to the ground or the shin coming forward, so the knee coming out towards the toe. Anterior tibialis can control that motion and decelerate it down along with the calf and everything around there. So they can act concentrically and eccentrically. But specifically for the posterior tibialis, with that muscle coming underneath the foot, the arch needs to be able to flatten, right, to be able to absorb that load. So they're both what we call yielders. They're supposed to be controlling the eccentric phase of the motion with running and sprinting. And if you don't have enough range of motion, like you alluded to with dorsiflexion, the same can be said conversely too for plantar flexion. Like you need to be able to plantar flex fully to be able to get that anterior tibialis to be able to lengthen out fully as well. So if you're working in the shortened range of motion constantly, like let's just say most people have a very limited amount of ankle dorsiflexion. It's like 10 degrees. Mm. Freaking terrible, right? So you can think about it this way. That muscle is just constantly pulling in a shortened range on the periosteum and the bone, that's where it gets really irritated. So from a training standpoint, the best thing that you can do is one, treat it like the muscle it is. It's a break, right? And it's also a break that has to have a lot of endurance. So high repetition, high load for it, but then also treating it in a closed chain to be able to decelerate your body against gravity as well.
Mm. So would it be a hole maybe in their off-season training or something that they're not focusing on doing the things they need to maintain range of motion, both in plantar flexion and dorsiflexion?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is one of those things that, you know, we see with especially kids.
Is it a mechanism where, like, for example, if we were to go in and take all Texas kids and do an ankle assessment on their plantar and their dorsiflexion, that it might be predictive of potentially getting shin splints if they were limited on the range?
Big picture, yes. Okay. Right. Because like I was saying, like kids, especially nowadays in the high school age, they spend a lot of time sitting on the phones and everything. So their ankles are never really being loaded fully, right? We know that we can be in the gym training for 60 to 90 minutes, but if you spend most of the rest of your day sitting, it's kind of counteracting everything that you just did in the gym anyway. So you have to, yes, attack it in the gym, but then also spend some time outside the gym so that you don't go backwards as well. So kind of like a daily maintenance type of a thing, but you have to work both ends of the spectrum, like dorsiflexion is important, but also that plantar flexion component as well.
Well, within the warm-ups, we are hitting cocky walks and heel walks. Mm. Heel walks were a big one. Actually, in the flow of things, introduced heel walks before our cocky walks.
After they get done with their dynamic warm-up and their prep stuff, would it make sense to maybe put some bands or really even just a strap around and like force them into like, we had those, they were like, some form of like stitch nylon, but they had loops in them and you could put them around your toe. And I used to grab and actually pull for dorsiflexion and have somebody pull me on plantar flexion and kind of force it. And I'll tell you, when that happened, if I didn't do that, I would start to feel like on my right knee, my anterior tib would get bound and then it would get kind of painful and I'd almost have to like crack it and almost pull my foot down and kind of get it to adjust, and then I could kind of manipulate it a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's one way to do it. You have a training partner, it's great. Like, we love the manual resistance stuff for the anterior tib, and it's a great way to overload it eccentrically. But if you don't have a training partner, how else can you
bands
try and affect it? I don't think the bands are – I think they're good to get, like, that burning effect from an endurance standpoint, but it's just not enough force to make any appreciable, adaptable change. Like, you have to do it with your foot on the ground. And when we talk about dorsiflexion – dorsiflexion is going to be limited by the knee position, right? Okay. Whether the knee is bent or whether it's straight. And that's going to have an effect with the gastroc or the soleus. So soleus is more active with the knee bent, gastroc, the big meaty portion of the back of the calf, you can see, more active with the knee straight. So it's going to be better to get somebody into a loaded position, like using a slant board or having their feet on a 45-pound plate, a few inches off the ground, so you have some range of motion to work through and load them up and get some load in a closed connect chain fashion like that versus an open connect chain with a band.
Cool.
Yeah, in two different positions.
So
I can do one of those. I was thinking manual resistance, but then I got to take them up to the, like the bleachers in the stands. Mm-hmm. So I lose, again, 5 minutes. If I only have 10, 15 in practice, that's precious.
So if you did some form of manual resistance, like if you did a few of those and then followed them with like some Maasai jumps where they're getting some a little bit of like focusing on fast twitch and then being able to push their toes.
Throwing this out there, groups of three. Rather than going up to the bleachers, one dude is all fours. The other dude is dead bug on his back, puts his calves on the back, and then partner manual
resistance.
Donkey
calf raise?
Donkey calf, but donkey manual resistance tip. Too weird?
Yeah.
Because we've done MR growing. We've done Mr. Butterflies. Like, John, we're out there.
Oh, I believe that you have your athlete's best interest at heart. I just think that at the end of the day, a lot of the problems you're trying to solve, I don't know if you can solve in season.
It's tough to solve it, especially at the game or in practice.
So yeah, you're working within the framework in which you're presented, but everybody that I've ever seen with shin splints was somebody who hadn't, and not to say your guys are this at all, because I think that they're, like with kids with growing connective tissues and, you know, and the fact that they're changing, you know, limb lengths, like, you know, anthropometrical ratios, growth. I mean, they're in this really interesting piece. Like I remember, I had out of nowhere, I grew like 4 inches 1 year and, I had really bad Achilles tendonitis. Mm-hmm. And like my mom, we went to see the orthopedic, who was our neighbor. And he's like, I think your Achilles are just short for your height. He goes, it's like you had this growth spurt and like the connective tissues take time. Like now all of a sudden your femur's long, all the angles are changed. And your Achilles are just going to need to stretch. So I stretch my Achilles every day and it ended up being fine. But it got to the point where like I felt like I had to run almost flat footed. Like I couldn't push off because it was so painful. But it was just – and the doctor's like, weird shit happens when you grow, which I think is hilarious now. A doctor would never tell you that. But he's like, dude, you grew a whole bunch. Like connective tissues are going to be short and it needs time to lengthen and deal. And he was right. Within a few months, it went away. But for like 3 months, it was awful. So I think for these kids – you know, they are in a lot of transitional sports and now all of a sudden they got all this different loading. And I think maybe there could be an issue with that. But at the end of the day, like, I mean, how, like, if you were to put, like, if, like, how many kids do you think are dealing with this?
Ooh, maybe 10. Let's call it 10.
So out of how many? 30?
45.
Okay. So probably 10%. So is it something where, you know, in the off season you implement a protocol like, hey, man, like, next year we don't need shin splints to be, so we got to do this 2 days a week?
Maybe at home.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way I would attack it.
The other one, too, and I know this is funny, is if you bend your knee and you put your foot straight like this, and then that's something I do. I put my hand on my heel and I constantly stretch into plantar flexion. So that's like a big one for me to do this.
I think a good and easy one for you guys to do on the field, whether it be during a practice or a game, to at least mitigate some of the effects is put them into a kneeling position like you were talking about. It's exactly going to go into pretty much the same pattern with the laces down on the turf. And then start to sit the butt back towards the heels. And once you take up all that range of motion, then lean the trunk back and try to pick the knee up off the ground. Yeah. And that'll put a giant load through the anterior tibialis and get a little bit of posterior.
So basically child's pose, but we're lifting the knees.
No child's pose. No. Yeah. If we're talking yoga, it's camel pose.
Yeah, leaning back.
Yeah. So
leaning back. The other one too is get some Gatorade cups, half fill them with ice, freeze them, and then rip the top off and then ice cup.
I did tell them that one. A couple guys barked back like ice, bad. So there's a lot of other information they received.
So ice, like and Kelly Starrett and I have argued on this for fucking years. And I know that there's all these people that battle on this ice and everything. I think the worst thing you can do is add heat to inflammation. Like I think for like, you know, in an acute injury where something happens and, you know, this whole thing, you don't need to ice. And this, like, sometimes it's pain relief. like ice cupping and just reducing the inflammation and taking the pain away. Like there's value in that for the nervous system, mm-hmm. just calming the nervous system and taking away that pain. Like I've never in my life, when I've iced an injury, ever thought this is bad just for the cooling effect. When something's hot and you put ice on it, it's almost like, and like, I feel myself instantly relax. Even when I get in the cold pool, I get in there and it's, I know it's cold, but like instantly my heart falls, like it, or my heart rate falls. I think there's just a relaxation. And I think once those kids are inflamed and the shin splints have lit up, just ice cupping it and using a little bit of ice just to cool it, I think would help them tremendously.
Yeah. I would advocate for that too.
Time frame on there
for the icing stuff. Yeah. Well, typically you don't want to have it on any more than 20 minutes if it's on there by itself. If you're just moving it around, 2-3 minutes.
Just yeah. If you could just ice cup it, you just numb it a little bit and give them a little bit of relief. Also, what's interesting too, with the shin splints, if you're running a ton and then you stop and you ice cup, it'll give you just enough time to relax that maybe it goes away for a mm-hmm. second. And I know that because when one year when I was playing, I think I told you like something happened weird in my shin where like I almost felt like the fibula was kind of getting stuck and I'd almost have to like take my hands and manipulate it to get it to move. And like it would get kind of painful. And if I stopped and iced it real quick, it would relax and I'd be fine.
Yeah, because I did have shin splints freshman year, track, football, track, plus all the training shit. But then completely idiotic, unaware, the trainer just looks at my shoes, folds them in half, and was just like, basically throw these away. So it was as simple as a shoe swap for me back then.
Yeah, because the other one too is, I know you guys are probably a little young for this, but they used to sell these things that you used to put under the balls of your feet.
Oh, Spud Webb, baby.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so a bunch of the basketball players got those and were walking around school with these things. So what they did is they elevated the front of the foot by like 4 to 5 inches. And what they were trying to do was like, they were actually shoes even. And they would walk around and they were trying to keep you like elevated all the time to strengthen your calves because allegedly you could vertical jump like 6 inches higher. Every one of those dudes gets shin splints.
Well, why do you think that is?
Why do I think that is? I think because overuse. Yeah. I think that because they were constantly, you know, like your foot's made to go flatten and the way the arch, now all of a sudden you're in basically a flexed position all the time. And when you do relax, you're getting, you know, just
shortens everything up again, just like we talked about. You're almost limiting the range of motion even more.
Yeah.
All right. So it needs, like I said, needs to be able to lengthen.
What's Spud Webb?
You think he actually wore those? Or you just say fucking marketing.
For that photo shoot.
For that photo shoot. But I like, man, I've seen guys deal like, so what's funny is I don't remember shin splints in the NFL. And the only time I remember shin splints was in college when I think I told you Keith Gilbertson said we were too fast. I tell you this in the offseason. Came in and said, you guys are too fast. You guys are too fast as a team. We need better endurance in the fourth quarter. So instead, he changed the conditioning test to a mile run. Mm. And so we stopped sprinting and everybody was just doing mile runs to try to pass our conditioning test. It's kind of like in the Army, like, oh, we're going to do push-ups, sit-ups, and a mile run. Nobody trains. Everybody just trains for the test. Same thing. And everybody started getting shin splints because you're a bunch of 300-pound dudes are out there trying to run sub-7-minute miles.
Way too many reps.
Yeah, it was just fucking way too many sprints. Yep. And then we ended up getting our fucking dicks kicked in the dirt the next year. Went like 3-8 and Gilbertson gets fired and is like, man, I tried to do, I'm like, oh my God, this was awful. First of all, as a football team, if anybody ever tells you you're too fast, you go good. Let's get faster.
Yeah. You told that story to Boyd Epley and his response is quite comical.
What did he say?
Our listeners will have to tune in. Find out.
You know what? That was a great podcast.
Such a tease.
That was a great podcast. And I know, unfortunately, like he's not going to have the same clout as a Jay Cutler, but in terms of strength coaching, like that dude sits at the top. I mean, he is the first strength coach. I mean, he started the NSCA. I mean, the dude's just a legend and, was super cool to talk to and connect with. But I think with that shin splint thing, man, like I do remember if people shin splints, they would stop and they would ice cup them for like 3 to 5 minutes and then put them back out there and they were usually okay. Yeah. And and I'm thinking about the mechanism for it. Maybe it just gives them enough time to like, it's lit up a little bit of ice, relax, and then get them back out there.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a great opportunity, especially when they're hot like that, just to be able to get them to move again and continue to play. You know, you brought up the shoe, the cleat thing. I think a lot of guys actually tie those things way too tight and they're too small mm-hmm. for the feet as well. So now the midfoot can't even move. right? Because we know when the foot hits the ground, you're running, even if you're staying on your toes, you're supposed to see a little bit of a flattening of the arch to load that posterior tib that we talked about to be able to propel you forward as well. So if the shoe is so tight, it's preventing that motion.
Or too rigid. Because now they put, so when I was at picking up, I went to go get shoes for the kids. I was looking at all the different sports shoes. Mm-hmm. The spikes, like the football spikes, they have carbon fiber now in the sole. So the soles are so rigid because what they figured out, at least what they're talking about for speed, is that if they can create more rigidity in the shoe, there can be like more energy absorbed and a pushing off of effect. So like they felt that too much flex in the shoe created a wet noodle effect for the foot, which is totally counterproductive. I'm like, right. Why are you trying to get the rigidity out of the foot? Or I mean, out of the shoe, you want it from the foot. Mm-hmm. I would rather have a softer foot that exposed my arch to what I needed to more so than a rigid, you know, carbon fiber insole.
Like we talked about last time too, where that foot needs to be stiff, not rigid. It needs to be stiff to be able to propel you forward, but not so rigid that it can't move.
Well, it's not what you're talking about with the back, exactly. Where you need to be stable, but not
when you need to be.
Yeah. And then you need to be strong, but mobile, you know, so I think it's like a balance of both.
Absolutely.
Well, you guys are forgetting a couple key factors here.
Ooh, what's that?
Lay it on us, Mr. McQuilkin.
Well, in lacrosse, 90-10, it's 90% how you look and 10% how you play. And it all starts from the ground up. So your cleats have to look the part.
So really? What does it mean to look the part?
So give me a little background on this 90-10 deal.
Player.
So wait. So give me a little background on this 90-10. It's 90% of how you look, 10% how you play.
Right.
And it starts from the ground up. So you got to have like the freshest cleats on the planet.
Freshest cleats. I mean, if they're black, you're already behind.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Nobody rocks black cleats. Everybody wears white cleats?
Uh-huh. Well, you got to be fast with those.
So fresh, so clean.
So then
you got to have colors, like colored shoes or just straight up white? Fresh white shoes.
Fresh white, like toothbrush clean.
Yeah.
And then socks to boot. And then.
Do you guys wear knee highs?
A matter of preference, however.
Or they wear like four sets of them, but they're all staggered at different heights?
No. It's like calf height. And then you got to rep your brand, whomever that may be. So of course Nike's hot stuff. Yeah. But then I mean with the helmet.
What about the shorts? Because I see a lot of kids in the hill country indoor wearing like real short chubbies.
I mean chubbies are in.
Yeah, so everybody's wearing real short shorts like
mm-hmm. implied.
Like
because you gotta
come
show
on, baby.
You gotta show
Four
off
half, baby.
Gotta
Four
show off your quad. Even you gotta show off your quad stump.
And your sweet leg.
Even
path.
If there is a lack thereof.
Okay, so everybody's wearing short shorts, and they're also real tight, like short shorts, but like nut huggers, like real tight, like real fitted in the crotch,
cup huggers,
banana hammock.
Oh my god!
So if they're not, then you get to roll up the waistband. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
like basketball girls
like,
do,
like the chicks do.
Yeah,
like volleyball, like the
or
yeah, like
too.
The yeah the.
I don't know about volleyball, but
definitely basketball,
definitely b-ball.
So they roll their shorts, so they roll the tops
to match. Desired height, yes.
Okay.
Can't exactly take your athletic shorts to go get hemmed.
Well, so like how far above the knee? Are we talking like 6 inches above the knee, like mid-thigh or like?
Depends on where you are in your growth spurt, my friend.
Okay.
Then the helmet. We went to this with Marcus Holm. He broke down the head.
What about leg shavers? Are they all leg shavers?
No, but I wish them good luck in their quest. For leg hair.
Okay. Like. So they, no leg hair or leg hair on these kids?
Or spot. I'm not paying attention to that. I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, there was a kid we saw the other day at Hill Country Indoors wearing real short shorts, sickly long leg hair. And I was like, you need to wear some lower shorts. I don't need to see all that thigh meat.
Dude's on the quest. I get it. Just look at me. But then, then the hair, you get so. Freaking bounce,
what,
flow,
well, I,
lettuce.
What about the
balty.
Shirt? What about the shirt? Are they going midriffs? Are they like cutoffs?
Excellent
midriffs?
Question. So football got the cutoff, all for that, the sleeveless cutoff. But then a lot of kids just go no shirt. So no shirt on the pads.
Oh, shirtless.
Uh-huh.
I don't think that's going to feel good, right?
It's a lot of nipple chafing.
It is. Sure looks good.
Hope they wear Band-Aids.
Or some basketball approach, just oversized tee, but tucked into your short shorts.
Huh. Yeah.
So big sleeve. Because you do have elbow pads to factor in.
Oh, this is true.
Okay, so you have to wear elbow pads.
And gloves.
Yes, you have to wear elbow pads.
Okay. So you got guys wearing midriffs, pads over the top. Is there a jersey?
Yeah, of course.
Is the jersey like mesh or is it like you know, like our practice? You remember back in the day you used to have those mesh practice jerseys like the with the holes? Or are they wearing like actual
jerseys? Probably the sweetest thing we got going on is the game jerseys are football jerseys.
Ooh.
Yeah. But nice. Then, I mean, it's for the team to decide.
Fitted sleeves or are they open sleeves?
No, open.
Oh, like big sleeves.
Oh, it's cool. It's the best thing we got going. Drip, drip. But the, I mean, from the helmet, then you got the hair. You need the hair out the back.
Oh, you got to have a mullet.
Well, you at least got to have hair out the back. So lettuce, bounce, flow, many different terms and names. Balti, according to Marcus Holman. What's up?
Lettuce in the back.
Yeah. And then the big thing is it's called tilt. So we don't have a lacrosse helmet here, but there's several different bars. Charles, pull up a lacrosse helmet on the screen. So there's several different bars to look for, like a cage.
Yeah.
But rather than a football.
Like different face masks. So you can put like a different like face mask or cage on there?
No. But the bar in which you choose to look through is all up to you. And this is called tilt. Look, hey, just pull up Marcus Holman, like picture, and you'll see a representation.
So is this guy their spirit animal?
Holman? I don't think so. I'd have to ask who they follow. But I appreciate his work. So if
So that one down, that second one on the left right there. So that's what he's rocking.
Yeah, you can see him looking through the top bar there.
Mm-hmm. Then, okay, click on
that. Is that a lot of tilt? Or is that
So they want their helmet tilted down so the top is low on their eyes.
Think of Peaky Blinders, right?
Yeah.
So the lower,
yeah,
the less eyes that you can see, the cooler you are.
Yeah.
So like the less you can see the ball, the cooler you are. 90-10. It's not about whether I can catch or see. It's how I look, John.
Okay. So how are they getting this? So by basically pulling their helmet down as low as you can to cover the top of their eyes so they can't see.
Yeah. And then it goes the other way. Like, Charles, if you look up, it's either second or third bar syndrome. So you see some kids looking through the second bar.
That looks a little silly.
Yeah. So then it's still not. This is a couple things piss me off. It's still not cool to strap your helmet up.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
So you don't want to wear a face. So you don't want a chin strap.
Well, it's like, oh, my helmet is loose. I'm cool. It's like, shut up. You take a hit, you're going to break your jaw, and then you're out for a year.
So I got a question. Where does this all stem from? Like, where are they? So I know.
No idea.
So when we were in high school, there was like guys like looked at different college teams, and there was like a hallway about like stacking your socks, and like the other thing that guys would go and purchase special like black athletic tape, and they wanted to be spatted one of their wrists on black tape instead of white tape to try to look cool. And I mean,
you want to know where it comes from is TikTok.
So like everything else.
So
Charles feels this comes from TikTok.
Okay, how does this come from TikTok? What's the lettuce? Dude,
but this has been part of it. So look up Mikey Powell.
Has this been around since you were slanging balls?
Oh, yeah. So I was in high school when Mikey Powell was playing in college, and this guy was like the representation. Big time on eye black.
Oh, like his mascara ran.
Like the Grim Reaper.
Like his mascara ran.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but he's like 5'6".
He's
captain of the 5'8" and short club.
The whatever. Short Kings.
Short Kings.
He's part of the Short Kings.
He is Short King. But yeah, dude, so you can see this guy, mullet, in 22. This dude's number? Yeah, pretty boy. So like this dude's mullet and brothers, they were all 22. So then like the thing for decades, and Gary Gate, so a legend there, he was number 22. So, like, whoever at Syracuse is number 22, that's like you're anointed as the king of lacrosse.
Okay.
So, like, it was the thing on all teams across the nation to be number 22. That was everybody's stud.
Okay. So, 22 was like the fucking hitman, the killer, the assassin.
Yeah, like my freshman year roommate.
So wait a minute. That
only
second
way he came is if he got 22.
So that second pick where the guy's got the basically open sleeves, like the real drapey football jersey, and the second one, Mike Powell, right there. Can you see? So, yeah, click on that one, Charles. So he's got the open sleeves and the football jersey, and he's looking through the top bar.
Yeah, that pick is taken in the year 2000.
But that's still fucking cool.
Oh yeah,
like the football jerseys.
But it went away. Now it's back. So, like, look up Ohio State lacrosse. So, they're, like, big-time football school and identity, and they take that on to the team.
Uh-huh.
And so, they got football jerseys. It's pretty cool. But then there's certain jerseys I hate. So, you can see that's the style we went.
Okay. But those guys are, mesh one, but those guys are actually wearing normal shorts. They're wearing knee highs. They're wearing top of the knees. Football shorts.
That's our style of jersey this year. I love it. What I hate, if you look up Syracuse, they wear like Under Armour short t-shirt, performance t-shirt.
Are they collared shirts? Do they wear performance polos? That would be dope.
That used to be women's lacrosse uniforms.
Yeah, the girls used to wear collared shirts.
The polos, yeah.
And skirts.
So you can see these guys, it's like a Under Armour tee and then this sleeveless basketball jersey on top. Not a fan, personally.
Oh, so what's up with the eye black?
That's just a thing, dude.
Man, dude, when I used to see dudes with eye black on, I used to be like, hey, yo, man, the mascara's running. You need to go take care of that shit.
I'll mention that.
Yeah, just be like, hey, man, dude, if you can't get your mascara to stop running, you shouldn't wear mascara.
Emo, bro.
Yeah. Be like, I loved The Cure.
I was listening to a lot of Cure when I wrote that song.
Dude, this is hilarious, man.
I mean, there's a whole aura and culture with it.
It is. I mean,
how the kids find this? No idea.
It's TikTok. Like, that's how Charles, his whole ensemble today is fucking TikTok.
No. What are you emulating today, Charles?
I just got this fresh bomber.
For our listeners, Charles is dressed in all black. He's still mourning Bills loss.
So Charles looks like he beat up like a 75-year-old Italian man in South Philly and stole his fucking jumper.
You would probably rock this. It kind of fits.
Who, me? Oh yeah, I would. I love jumpsuits. Does it have a belt? I mean, dude, does it have a belt like fucking Jack LaLanne?
Did you just zip that all the way up?
Yeah.
You're so sharp.
Yeah. Did you see me? I was like, hold on. Let me get this all the way up there. I mean, dude, the fact that he looks like he beat up like a 75-year-old Italian man in fucking South Philly and stole his jumpsuit.
Yeah, but notice the white socks, white shoes.
Yeah. Billy White Shoes Johnson over here.
Your pants don't go down to your ankles.
Yeah, but that's the style on
it's
TikTok.
Part of the ensemble.
Dude, that's how Jake Paul
expose the socks.
Oh yeah, there you go. Okay. Harry Heppensaw would totally sign off on this.
Oh, here's the other thing, like lacrosse sweatpants,
dude,
rolled up to the cover in the calves. So I can attribute, like, we had to wear sweatpants throughout until our first game. Like, that was the rule. So all of us, you know, it's certainly in DC gets too hot for freaking sweatpants.
Why'd you have to wear sweatpants? It's just part of the deal.
Why did our grandparents cook half a chicken or whatever? You know, the Aaron Auspice deal, just because that's what the team did before.
Okay.
Whatever. So then, like, your calves would get freaking ripped. Little did we know we're doing freaking, like, BFR occlusion training. Freaking just pulling up sweatpants and hugging on your calves. You've got to stay at least somewhat cool.
Nice.
But maybe that's what we're missing.
So
shin splints. Got to roll the sweats up.
So
BFR Tibbins.
What you guys are talking about, like what you've referred to with this hairstyle, is really hockey hair. So
whoa. Well, first off, lacrosse predates hockey.
There's no way.
It was invented by the Native Americans.
You think the Native Americans heads, right? were rocking hockey hair?
Well, yeah. Flow. They didn't
have
a
lot of
hair.
Flow.
Well, I know they probably look like you. Yeah. Like, but I'm just saying hockey hair, which is usually everything real, you know, that's where the mullet really came from, was the hockey hair. Like, because if you go back and you watch it, Charles, what
okay.
was the
history of the mullet?
What was the movie? The hockey movie with the brothers where they're like, oh, putting foil on my
Slapshot.
Yeah, Slapshot. You
coach,
go back,
coach.
Yeah, coach, I'm putting foil on my knuckles. dude, if you look at Slapshot, those guys, the brothers, have like the best mullets ever. And I really think that's where the mullet came from, was from that movie.
I think Kurt Russell predates Slapshot.
Look at the brothers. God, what are their names? I cannot remember the brothers' names.
Hansons.
Yeah. Those dudes are the best.
The national anthem is probably my favorite scene.
Dude, I like that he's just, they're all bloody with glasses on. Those guys would play on 1977.
Wow.
I think, like, it's hockey hair. So what you're saying is that lacrosse hair is a thing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Holman even said it. Just like, that's how boys in Baltimore are. It's just like, this is normal.
Like the hair you're rocking right now with the coif and the waves, the slow breaking waves.
Yeah, this is bounce. Like, born to play.
Oh. Born to play. I like it. What about, like, is facial hair a thing? Like mustaches? Weird mustaches?
I don't know the rules of the high school. Like, that's high school dependent. Because we played one high school, and I'm like, you get shave. Dude, you get away with that at school? Me personally, Katie Taylor, we had to shave, clean shave, because that was their security. Because if they see somebody walking around with facial hair, everyone knows you're not supposed to be here.
Dude, we had guys. I had a few dudes on my high school football team. I had one dude that had a full beard in eighth grade.
I'm sure those kids existed, but they had to,
they had to shave.
Keep it tight.
I'm still working on trying to grow that one.
Yeah, I mean, dude, my beard's not very good either. I mean, look at Charles over there. He grew that in a weekend. So, Grizzly Adams did have a beard. Jesus, he like I not only go beat up a 75-year-old Italian man in South Philly on took his jumpsuit. He also got his beard.
Yeah, they're looking for a clean-shaven man, so Charles is good.
Like what? Like one of those like old Italian man hats?
Like a fedora?
Like a fedora.
Can we get you a fedora?
Oh, Charles, dude. Hey, Charles, answer me this. How many fedoras do you own?
Yeah, what's your fedora count?
I have none.
Yeah, bullshit.
Don't believe you.
Italian man hat. I think they call those berets.
Of course you do.
No, put up Peaky Blinders.
Tilt.
Dude, I've been rocking. Tilt. Dude, I've had a newsboy hat. Like since fucking my freshman year of college, legitimately, I have had one of those. And the hilarious part. So those are called newsboys. I told you the story that I had one in. I used to wear one. Like had one in college, and my dad. I went to a game, and my dog ripped it apart. And my dad felt bad about it. So every year for Christmas, he would buy me a new one of these. And I have dozens of these things. So the only problem, I haven't broke it out yet. People are like, oh, you've been watching Peaky Blinders? I'm like, yes, and I have these hats.
It's like they're going to attend a Jordan Peterson show.
dude, so we went.
Well, we got 20 minutes. We can get into it.
We went and saw Jordan Peterson. So Jordan Peterson came. He's doing on tour. His first stop was here in Austin. Tex hit me up. I like that moment went on, brought tickets. It was funny. I got kicked out of the system three times. Every time I got kicked back, we'd just get getting pushed back. So finally I get tickets.
One comment. We couldn't ask actually for a better seating placement because it was you, me, and Dr. Kirk Parsley all sitting ducks in a row, and we're all jammed in there like airplane seats. So what do we do? Is the very last row on the bottom, we just broke apart the chairs and got our own space.
So, yeah, we go, and as I show up, like, all these dudes are, like, in suits. And when I tell you, like, a suit, like, not the type of suit I just came from work, like, the suit that I went home, took off my work clothes, took a shower, and put on this suit because I have this special suit to go out with. And, like, it was really weird. Like, I mean, dudes
three-piece were, suit?
Like, there were some really, like, people went all out, like, hey, this is – I'm going to get a special – suit for when Jordan Peterson comes, so I'm going to wear the suit so he notices me type of deal. And JP maybe suit. I can – and I saw that people waited and got pictures with him. So I saw a couple people – like he must have posed for pictures. I didn't see that part in the deal. But people were posing in their suits with Jordan Peterson to the point where he even brought it up and was like, you know, I saw these guys, you know, dressed really well in suits. And his daughter, Michaela Peterson, actually was like, oh, I didn't know that wearing suits was my dad's deal now. So I thought that was interesting, but these guys, man, everybody was dressed to the nines, and I didn't feel like we got the memo.
What were you wearing?
Jeans and t-shirts.
Seems accurate.
Yeah, I left practice, so sweats.
Yes.
But what was really cool was it's been cold here, so I can actually break out some of my cool jackets. So I did bust out my pea coat, which I was very happy about because my wife's like, are you going to throw that away? I'm like, no. There might be once a year I get to wear this pea coat.
I did just get myself a sweet leather jacket this year, too. Nice. Bomber style. Oh, yeah.
Sweet. I'm a huge fan of leather jackets and anything wool that looks like a peacoat.
Well, back to Peterson. You took some good notes. We've discussed this a little.
So, I did. I think it was a cultural event for a lot of reasons. Like, hey, we got a chance to see Jordan Peterson speak. I didn't get a chance to see him a first time around, and I always regretted that. So I didn't want to miss out on this one. It was extremely – like, I think that the magnitude of the event was probably overwhelming and a lot of buildup. I also think that he's his fitness in terms of his ability to get up and present there might have been on the low side because I know he's still sick and, you know, he went through that. If you read his book, you know, he was addicted to the benzos and they put him in a coma. I mean, it's really pretty interesting in his book. Mm-hmm. But like it didn't look like – I mean, he got up there and he spoke for an hour. I was kind of hoping that he would go long form, but he had done a four-hour podcast with Joe Rogan. So who knows how that thing all went down, but which I haven't listened to yet. But his fitness, I think, was a little bit low, which
But he's going to cover 40, 50 dates this year.
Yeah.
The aim that he said was 120,000 people to connect with in person.
That's impressive.
So that was, I think it was cool. We went to the first one out of the Austin trip in the whole.
So I think he's such an amazing thinker. I think for this generation, he's one of these unique thinkers, not to, you know, put him in a Marcus Aurelius or a Seneca or any of the, you know, great thinkers. And he brought up Dostoevsky and some of this, these different like existentialists. But I think in terms of going down, when we're going to look at cultural impact, I think you got Joe Rogan in his long form. And I think you got a guy like Jordan Peterson. And what's amazing to me is if you read his books, it's like, you know, like the metaphor for, you know, clean your room, which the one thing I was a little pissed about was people in the audience felt the need to like scream things out to somehow like interject themselves into it. And one of the guys screamed like, clean your room, which in his deal, like his book is like, it's the metaphor of, don't go out and tell somebody else how to clean the room if your fucking house isn't in order, which, you know, I mean, straight from the Bible in so many ways of like, you know, don't cast, you know, people in glass houses shouldn't throw stones, which is what he's saying. It's like, wake up every morning, clean your room, make your bed, stand up straight, be presentable, you know, do these things before you go out and you try to order other people to live their lives. And so he's using it both physically or literally and metaphorically, like clean your fucking room. Don't be a slob. Like get up and make your bed every day. Like as your parents, like my mom would yell, make her bed every day. If I get up and I don't make my bed, and if I walk in the middle of the day and my bed's not made, I make my bed. Like there's people that don't ever make their fucking bed. Make your bed.
And then they preach it too. I mean, I think that whole entire metaphor is just to live your life in integrity.
Yeah.
Like if you're going to tell somebody something, you better be doing it yourself as well.
Yeah. Which I think in our country and this present time, there's never been a time where we've been so disingenuous with this shit. I mean, we see it all the time, like within politics, where, you know, they're standing, you know, beating the war drum on something that just a month ago, they, you know, like my favorite is the filibuster. You know, every one of these people have fought it, you know, to and for the filibuster based on where they are within their political leanings and the political climate. I wrote down a couple of his statements. He said, you share ignorance with everyone around you. I thought that was a great comment. The idea that, like, you know, everybody's ignorant. And Joe Rogan, he even brought up, you know, was extremely complimentary of Joe. But even Joe himself is like, I don't know if the people I'm bringing on are right or wrong. I don't know if they're being truthful or not. I'm just going and having an open-ended discussion with people that I believe to be experts that I'm trying to educate myself.
Free of judgment too, which is what I respect about Joe's podcast as well.
I think the fact that people are railing so hard against Joe Rogan just goes to prove the impact he's having in terms of opening people's eyes, that now the establishment has realized that exactly how influential this individual is, who does not fall within their paradigm of fucking pressure. Like, and they're going to try to enact it. Like at the end of the day, he's such a wild card of these individuals and commands such respect that I don't think that they can have somebody that's outside the establishment with that much power.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's because he brings a lot of light to the inconsistencies and the incongruencies that are going on that just make the narrative crumble.
Yeah.
Right. He gets people to think.
Well, he's also a thinker, but he's also, not only is he an extremely fucking well-seasoned, excellent comic, which if you think, if you put like, I'll just give you an example. If you were to take a politician and a comic and put them on stage and have people call out and heckle them and how to work a crowd, dude, a comic any day of the week is 100% better than a politician. You know, like you can't rattle those dudes. You can't, you can throw hecklers. You can throw anybody you want into Joe Rogan. He can stand up there with drunks and 2 a.m. on a sunset and can handle a fucking crowd and fucking not only eviscerate them both, you know, mentally and, you know, with his words, but also they want to come up and throw blows that dude to fucking hit you with a spinning back kick and knock you into the middle of next week. So it's not only, I mean, have you guys ever seen any like gone and seen stand-up comedy?
Mm-hmm.
I love to go see stand-up comics. My favorite part is when the drunk asshole tries to heckle them and the fucking comics just open the bag of tricks and tear those dudes up and then they get all butthurt and want to fight them. I'm like, this is the best. Why the fuck would you – that's like showing up to an NFL football game and like jumping on the field and be like, I want to pass rush this 300-pound offensive lineman, and the dude breaks your neck and you're like, what an asshole. You're like, this is what this guy does. He's a paid thug who gets beat.
You brought it on yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you have a guy like Rogan who's not only skilled in terms of stand-up comedy and orator, and like he's intelligent. He's got a fucking little twist of thinking from, you know, whatever he's done with extracurriculars or with drugs. So he's got an interesting perspective. And on top of it, the dude's a badass martial artist and has the ability, like his Rolodex and the people he's had on. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's kind of like we talk on this podcast, like as much as we want to put information out, we have really interesting people that I've been educated from, people where I've been inspired. And a lot of times, like where we originally started it, I think I've benefited the most out of this podcast just because the people that we've allowed to create our genealogy and have on, like every time we bring somebody on, I'm like, shit, dude, this is an opportunity to educate myself. Like we bring on Marcus Holman. I didn't even know about flow and bounce for fucking lacrosse players.
Oh, I mean, I feel like Keith Barr is a much better representation of that.
Keith Barr. I mean, dude, Boyd Epley, which was cool. Yeah, was cool as shit. I remember I was an 18-year-old kid sitting in his office in Nebraska and got a chance to have, you know, met him 25, 27 years ago. So, okay, another one. He said that if you're going to try to solve a problem, you have to formulate it into a question. And the biggest issue we're running into in this country right now is the power structure fears this. They fear the formulation of questions because, I mean, that's what really Joe Rogan's doing, right? Like there's a problem. Let me bring people on and like, let's get to the root of this thing through long form discussion. And this is a big bit of fear. He also made a really good point with honesty on the edge is fear. So he said when honesty on the edge is fear that, I mean, that was just, so I'm just writing random things. He said, if you surround yourself with boring people, you're a boring person. So constantly fight to be in circles with interesting people. That the greatest barometer for yourself and whether or not you're interesting is if interesting people want to be around you. And he used that in Joe Rogan. He goes, Joe Rogan's a highly intelligent, very interesting people. Interesting people want to be in his company. If you look around and think everybody around you is boring and these people aren't interesting, it's because you're not interesting and you don't have anything to say.
Which we have control over too. You can control.
You can control your narrative. You can control your circle. I mean, you know, so problems are meant to be grappled. They are a call to destiny, calling you to ignore problems is to lose the battle of your life. So that was kind of an interesting piece. He said that we're in a situation where the present day, or at least the way that things are looking, it's as if people are trying to bend the structures of reality to avoid their thoughts. So instead of like dealing and like having critical thoughts, people want to just bend the structures of reality to basically acquiesce to what they want.
Well, think about the fear associated with actually sitting with your own thoughts. That's scary shit.
So like, he was using it in the sense of like, like, for example, I think on the podcast, he was talking about like the Bible is the structure for everything. And my dad said this years ago. My dad said, you know, the laws in this country are based off a Christian Anglo-Protestant values. So you have these like set of structures that really come from the Bible and, you know, turn the other cheek and this, and we set up to these laws. The problem is that everybody has to agree that this is the basis of which we're doing. And if that's not agreed upon and you don't subscribe to this, then how do these laws approach? Like for example, if I go out and I rob somebody or do something bad, the fear of going to jail has to be greater than actually executing this. Now, the problem is if jail is a better place than where you presently are, like, fuck it. If I rob this guy and get away, I'll have a better life. If I go to jail, it's probably better than I have. Then no longer jail becomes a deterrent. And so he goes, you know, as a white middle class kid, like, not that like you want to go out and do bad stuff, but like there's a way to be like, ah, you know what? I might have a couple drinks. Maybe I won't drink and drive, because what if I get caught for drunk driving? I'm going to lose my license. I can't go to my job and I might go to jail. What if you don't give a fuck because you don't give a fuck if you go to jail? I'll get fucked up. What if I care? I don't kill anybody because I don't have a conscience for it. So my dad always said that's the most difficult thing when you're dealing with criminals and as a defense attorney, where people don't subscribe to your same core values or your belief system. And you're over here being like, well, you murdered that guy. Well, yeah, fuck it. Who cares? Right. Like, I mean, it's we're based off of this, like, you know, Anglo-Protestant values. But what if you subscribe to Aleister Crowley's, you know, law of the beast, do as thou will. Well, fuck it. He has what I want. I'm going to kill him and I'll take what he wants, because at the end of the day, fuck it. This whole thing is bullshit anyway. So it's that was an interesting piece. But what he was talking about bending the structure of reality is, like, for example, you're born a man and you decide to become a woman, right? And now, or all of a sudden you don't become a woman, you just want to identify as a woman. And now you're forcing me, which is goes back to like Ben Shapiro's deal. Mm-hmm. I shouldn't have to like change thousands of years of evolution just because you decide that you don't want that to be the reality now. So you can't bend reality.
Because then you're just worrying about potentially offending everybody.
Well, there's an interesting thing that I actually I was thinking on this yesterday.
If you're easily offended, you're easily manipulated.
Yeah. So that's a big thing I've been thinking about in society, is that the way that they manipulate us is by trying to offend us. Because here's what they do. Whoever it is. But it's a really easy way to like manipulate people, is to try to offend them. Because what you do is you say something and it pushes people to one side or the other. And really, like, that's how they're manipulating a guy like Joe Rogan right now. They didn't know how to manipulate him. So now what they're trying to do, and at the end of the day, he's probably like laughing to himself. Mm-hmm. He's like, all this is doing is probably driving up. I'm getting 11 million downloads an episode. This is probably going to drive it to 20 because people are going to be outraged. And now I've agreed to say, you know what? I'm going to bring on people that, I have this Robert Malone on. I'm going to bring the person on the other side. So now I'm going to open this thing up to more discourse, to more, you know, contrarian views. All that's going to do is he's going to double his fucking viewer. This is probably like Ben Shapiro, I saw on Facebook, was like, oh, you know, why is he acquiescing? He doesn't owe these people anything. No, he's fucking intelligent, you know, and whether he's doing it or he has somebody smart around him, it's like.
But he's also being, we said, used this word already, he's holding himself in integrity, right? Because he is perpetuating discourse.
Yeah.
Which is how we arrive at better solutions to problems.
Now, here's another thing. I think what's really unique about him is, they always say, somebody owns everybody. Like, you know, everybody answers to somebody. I bet you he doesn't. It's like, fuck him. You don't want to listen to my shit? I'll fucking do it. Believe me, I already made enough money. I could stop today and fucking go on and go open a Brazilian jiu-jitsu or UFC comment. I mean, basically living the life that he wants to live. He's chosen to put himself in there because it's culturally relevant. It's important. And he probably views himself, you know, and to even
part of his purpose and part of his mission in life is how it seems.
So after Jordan Peterson spoke, his daughter, asked people to send up questions. And so they had some portal for it. And the question that I had, I knew they weren't going to answer. So it was all, she kind of gave him softball stuff. Like, how do you know it's the right woman when you meet her? Which isn't the questions I wanted. Mm-hmm. I wanted like a straight up, like Crime and Punishment, Dostoevsky. He wrote about the Superman phenomenon where, in there, Raskolnikov believed that the rules of society did not apply to him because he was of super character. He was considered a Superman. It's like one of the chief, like fundamental, themes of that, of Crime and Punishment, Dostoevsky's book, and that existentialist. And being an existentialist, fan within I was in college, that was a huge thing. It's something I always thought about. And you have a situation in society. And my comment, or what I would have asked him, is, does the internet and really the rise of information and like people that now can have instant celebrity based upon viral TikTok, has that changed? And do you think if Dostoevsky got a chance to write Crime and Punishment, it would be written differently today? But I really think a guy like Joe Rogan, whether or not he believes himself to be an extraordinary man or not, has put himself in a position where he can be this culturally relevant and fucking alter the trajectory of a lot of things. I think that's fucking, with great power comes great responsibility. And I hope he fucking wields it to break this whole motherfucker down. I hope he uses it to fucking shatter the house, because unfortunately there's a lot of bullshit. And I think there's a lot of people that are being cold and being fucking manipulated with fear. They're easily offended, so they're easily manipulated. And I think just the fact that he's had people on that have a different point of view than the standard fucking narrative scares people to death. Because what if they really found out that this thing was full of shit? What if they really found out that they were manipulated? Because here's a bigger issue. He even said it in that talk when in his Instagram deal. He's like, 6 months ago, you had been kicked off social media if you said that a cloth mask didn't stop the transmission of COVID. Now it's on the cover of Time magazine. 6 months ago, if you'd said it came out of a lab, they'd fucking ban you. Now that we know that to be true. So what's going to happen in another 6 months? And, you know, I just think that we're not being told the whole deal. And I think fucking Joe Rogan's going to have a burning sword to cut through it. I fucking support him for it. The one thing that was unique, or the quote that, or the piece of information that I wrote down that was most prevalent to me in hearing him speak was men need heroes and icons to follow. So I think a lot of times that was like seeing the excitement. There was a father and son that were sitting two rows ahead of us. Like the giddiness and the excitement of these two individuals to be there, and like the way that we were, I was just watching these dudes and they were like randomly screaming things. Like, I was like, this is probably their fucking Super Bowl. Like, it just, it's interesting to me that we've come to a time where people need icons and heroes to follow in a time when they maybe feel that those are absent. I mean, you know, you think about something to emulate, and Jordan Peterson is an extremely interesting thinker. The way his mind works is really fascinating, and the way he puts things together, I mean, he's really, really a very intelligent individual. And I think people are drawn to that. I think people are drawn to unique individuals and especially unique thinkers. I mean, it's why if you go back to ancient Greece with, you know, the Cynics and Seneca, and you have, you know, Plato and Aristotle and these individuals, like they would stand in the middle and speak, you know, whether it be within, you know, an amphitheater or this, or, you know, the steps here or there, and people would sit around and listen to them because people have always been entranced by intelligent thinkers.
Yeah. It's how they resonate, right?
Yeah.
It's because it challenges you to think yourself as well. And that's where, if we look at exploration, we talk about exploration with movement all the time. When you ask questions, you're exploring other avenues to a problem. And I think that's where, in today's time, today's society, we see people who don't want to critically think. They don't want to have to use their brain power to solve a problem. They just want to be told what to do.
Well, because it's at the end easy. Of the day, if you're wrong, it's somebody else's fault.
And you can place blame, and now you become the victim again.
Yeah. And we live in a victim mentality where, we have a ton of people following our training programs at powerathletehq.com/training if you want to check them out. But on those programs, the reason that we have thousands of people logging onto those programs is because they have faith in us and me as an individual who's done this before, and like the amount of progress that people make. And I think that there's, you know, it's nice to like, you know, hey, like I get bored of programming for myself. So I follow other people's training and I, you know, am constantly testing stuff. But at the end of the day, like I don't make any illusions that at the end of the day, I'm the final end product and I make the decision. But like, I think it's nice to kind of like free yourself to do other things and hand the reins over to experts. The problem is a lot of times people are willing to hand hand things over to people that aren't experts. Oh, I handed my money over to this financial advisor. Is he qualified? I don't know. He's a financial advisor. He seems like he's pretty good. Well, what clients does he have? Who has he worked with? Is he successful? What's the market? You know, like what strategy is he following? You know, oh, I don't know. He's just a financial advisor. I went with him. No. You got to have more than that. So I think like a lot of times for people, there's, you basically are able to separate yourself from guilt and failure by just handing the reins over and being like, well, you know, I'm just doing what the government told me. At the end of the day, when did people become so trusting of the government? I mean, like shit, like, you know, I mean, we have all these conspiracy theories from UFOs to, you know, Area 51 to the Kennedy assassination. I mean, anything that Oliver Stone's ever done just goes to point to show some nefarious, you know, government. I mean, every plot of every Jason Bourne movie is the same. I mean, dude, you want to look at the largest theft of the American people. Look at like the Federal Reserve Act.
Oh, I thought you were going to say the Jason Bourne franchise.
But right. Okay. But I mean, like look at the Federal Reserve Act.
A kid.
Right. The Federal Reserve is not federal, and it's not a reserve. It's a private entity. And they're the ones that control everything. I mean, it's crazy to me. All right. He also said Rogan is on the the reason that Joe Rogan is so successful is he's on the edge of ignorance at all times. right? He said that he shows up curious and has the ability to have his opinion changed on a moment's notice. So he goes in to have these conversations without preconceived notions. He's not driving it in a certain way where he wants the outcome in a certain way. Like, it's not canned. He's going in there. Hey, this guy's going to talk about this. And then Joe, who's an intelligent individual, I don't know what research he does, but he goes in as almost to be educated by these people, which is kind of the Larry King, mm-hmm. where Larry King would go and interview people and he wouldn't do any research so that he could be educated on it. Which, you know, there's certain people, like a lot of times when you get interviewed by a reporter or stuff, they've done a ton of research and they start canning questions because they're trying to get you to say something specific. Larry King, I mean, Joe Rogan, I think they're just looking for open narratives.
Yeah, I think like there's a lot of value in being flexible and being malleable. But that's why, you know, guys like us, and I think Joe as well, you go into every conversation, and including me with going to this sheepdog response course, it's you use the line all the time about being in a white belt mentality.
Yeah.
But it's also going in there as the person who knows nothing.
Yeah.
Right? It opens you up.
Well, it opens you up.
But it makes you receptive as well.
Well, and it's also I think people that are well-skilled and the people that probably teach that class have gone in and fucking dealt with so many people that come in with their own preconceived notions. And this isn't the way I do it. And you go in just like an empty cup, like, you know, we've said for years, like, you know, how can I pour water in your cup? How can I fill your cup if it's already full? Empty your cup and then allow me to fill yours. And that, you know, age old Bruce Lee analogy, you know, empty your cup. And, I think when you go in and you show yourself to be humble and it's like, man, I want to get my ass kicked. I want to learn as much as possible. I paid the money. I want to go on the fucking ride. You're the fucking ringmaster. Take me on the fucking ride and kick my ass and let's have some fun. And like, and you know, that was, you know, Craig, you know, made a, you know, paid me a good compliment when I went to his deal. He's like, man, you showed up as advertised. And even when I told him, he was like, when I saw him the other day, he was like, man, I posted.
Yeah, Jordan Peterson.
Yeah, Jordan Peterson, because we saw Craig Douglas, fucking great guy. If you have a chance to take his class, it's incredible. He was like, yeah, man, people saw you were there. And he's like, one dude was like, did he show up at the Shield? And he's like, why? He's like, that guy's like Captain America. And I was like, thanks, that's a fucking good compliment. I like Captain America. He's like, no, man, like people were like stoked. Like one, they were like fucking amazed that you would show up to him. I'm like, why wouldn't I? You asked me to come. And I'm going to show up and give you 100%. And dude, I don't know what you know, so fucking fill my cup. And I think that analogy or that that piece has been, it's been helpful to not only I think. Let me sort of say this without saying it weird. I think that is an extremely endearing thing when somebody shows up and they're humble and they want to learn. And as somebody who wants to teach or somebody that has information to give, when somebody takes that approach, you will fucking be like, man, you know, and like, you know, we have Tim Kennedy on the podcast. You'd be like, fucking Gusanus is great. That guy showed up. I mean, I hope he says this. Shows up.
He was a little bitch.
Yeah. I mean, but like, like if you show up, one, you paid the money, you showed up, you humbled yourself mm-hmm. and you said, fucking show me what you got. Give me your best and I'll fucking take it. Mm-hmm. He said, two more. He said, shake your fist at your sky and curse God, which I thought was interesting. Just randomly said it, and I like the way he said it. But he said, be honest, be brave, and be playful. And it struck me for the first time what Jordan Peterson, like the way, like, because I had this kind of picture of him in my mind a little bit. But he kind of reminds me of like a wise, eloquent uncle who you look forward to seeing every Christmas. Mm. Like he's well-dressed. He has something interesting to say. And like I was thinking as a kid, like showing up at like, you know, Christmas or like meeting our family or, you know, uncles or whatever. And like having these guys be, you know, larger than life, entertaining. But he just seems like a wise dude that you like well-dressed, sits down and has something amazing to say. And you're excited to see him at every family reunion or every family event.
Yeah, it's like an energy you want to be around.
Yeah.
Because it fills you up.
Yeah, he's an interesting dude. I was really interested to see the dynamic with his daughter. You know, I mean, like she was, you know, obviously he's got her kind of coming out, opening up. You know, I know she has a podcast and I don't know her, but like, it's, I feel like it's a large billing for her to have to come mm-hmm. up and like, you know, be the opening act for her father. So like, I'm good on her for going out there and being her father's daughter mm-hmm. and taking that upon herself. She felt a little, I mean, but maybe it was her first one. She just felt a little nervous in that she doesn't do it. But I wish her a lot of success with that.
Well, I mean, there was a lot of people there.
Yeah.
A lot of
And people were excited, man. Yeah. Well, the people were excited to be in his presence. And I always think, man, that's like a really interesting thing where people are just excited to be there and say they were there. I mean, we saw Lindsay Matthews and her husband. You know, we saw Craig Douglas. I mean, there was a bunch of people that we didn't see that I ended up seeing posting pictures on social media who were there. So it was like a very cool culturally relevant event to be at. And, man, I was stoked to see him get up there and speak because I was nervous that after what he went through, he would never get up and do this again. Mm-hmm. But I wished my only critique was I wish it was more structured. Like he talked about his new book, which is
Wrestling with God.
Yeah, Wrestling with
Something
God.
Something like that.
Yeah. I wish he would have got into a little bit of that because he's like, oh, I'm working on this new book called Wrestling with God. When you throw that name out there.
It's a powerful title.
Yeah. Like, tell me about the book. Get into it like that. Like if he had been like got up and talked about his new book, Wrestling with God, and the pieces that he's working through in this, and that had been the structure which he spoke from, I think that would have been incredible. It was, but it felt very just like, let's just have this conversation. It was great. I mean, but me personally, I would have liked to have felt a little more structure. And I would have, man, I wish I could have brought my dad. It would have been nice to go and hear that. And I, you know, and not like I sent him some of Jordan Peterson stuff before he passed away. I don't know how much he read, but, and I was trying to get him into listening to podcasts, but I would have liked to have heard, his interpretation of the information, whether or not he just thought he was full of shit or a blowhard or whatnot. But, I really enjoyed it and I thought it was great. So what'd you think, Mr. McQuilkin?
Well,
we got
time is a few more minutes. Extremely enjoyable experience. I mean, good company as always. Doc's excellent conversation. Our long ride home. The only critique I have, those I'll call them hecklers, because he was, as you mentioned, not conditioned.
Yeah.
Because he was on awesome trains of thoughts, and then there was these moments where people would shout out. I thought that was very selfish of them. And then he acknowledges them. And then lost for a moment.
Like, his train of thought.
So that was the negative piece, dude. So like, if you do go in the future, you guys, shut the fuck up.
Do you think do you think that's why it felt cut up, because he wasn't ready for the hecklers?
Potentially. I mean, I wouldn't be either. Like, what?
It breaks the train. Well, what you remember from the old CrossFit football days. So when I first started, as I was talking, people would shoot their hands up. And I would tell everybody, hey, wait to the very end to ask your questions, because I didn't have the confidence in the material. Then I got to the point where I was confident in the material. When somebody raised their hand, I would stop, fucking curb stomp them, and then continue on without missing a beat, because I knew the material. So what I don't think he was ready for, and you made a good point, was I don't think he was people like – so the social media or whatever it is, like everybody wants to somehow like be on stage with him. Everybody wants to interject and be into what he was doing. And I felt like the people screaming were their desire to interject themselves into what he was doing. And it did. I mean, I think it fucking rattled him a little bit.
Yeah.
Like he didn't feel offended, but it was like his train of thought, like he's up there trying to have this beautiful moment and a dude screams, "Clean your room." And he was like,
well, yeah, he positively acknowledged him, and then it was a few other times where, like, a comedian who's done their set, stop for one moment, okay, I'm going to curb stomp you,
yeah,
and then continue the joke.
Have you ever watched anything by Jimmy Carr? He's an English comic.
Oh, yeah, he's hosts a lot. He's a good guy.
Funny. Dude, have you ever heard him?
I don't want to get off.
Have you ever heard him deal? Have you ever heard him deal with hecklers?
No, but dude, now I will.
Go check out some of Jimmy Carr's stuff, dude. He can, like, I mean, just eviscerate, just does so well. But, like, as a comic, like, that's the first thing that those guys learn, because they go on stage and they suck. And it's the age old, like, you know, Dave Grohl, you got to go in the band, suck, and then you become Nirvana. Those guys go on stage, they do open mics, they do the 2 a.m. with the drunks on Sunset, and, like, they fucking hone their craft to the point where some dickhead gets into it. That's what these guys fucking live for. That's their battle cry. And you have a guy like Rogan, who is a fucking seasoned comic. I mean, a fucking Fear Factor. I mean, all these things. That's what that guy does. And you're going to put this dude in this situation? This guy's been training for it for his whole life. And on top of it, he can throw fucking hands and whoop just about anybody's ass if he wants. So you have a dude that's not only skilled, like with his words and that, also has the ability to use his hands and has the fucking largest, most powerful platform. I mean, dude, the fact that his information is more influential than any news broadcaster, any news outlet. He's getting more hits than CNN and all these other people. Fuck, that's incredible. Good on him. I feel like a meathead is at the top because he seems like a fucking meathead.
Yeah,
he's got a Stornex gym and he fucking swings kettlebells and he likes to, you know, I mean, dude, he's legitimately like, you know, fits within that circle. Like, I mean, dude likes to eat steak. He likes to kill shit, you know, Cameron Haynes and the whole deal. Like, fuck, man, good on him. And I'm stoked that like somebody like us is in that position of power because I know he'll wield that fucking sword, that flaming sword.
Yes. And the appreciated comments he made on leadership. Essentially opening yourself up even as a person in a position of authority to then still like allow yourself to be mentored by those you are leading, or open yourself. And then he referenced the same respect to within the house. So like the, say a father in the house working on allowing themselves to be loved. So the same, I guess, mechanisms and components in place as a leader, and then as the authority figure within your home, rather than what a lot of us men out there are used to as like, you know, non-love in the home, not saying love you and things like that.
Yeah, you need to be able to be assertive and surrender at the same time.
And well, the
working on that.
Wasn't it, man, it was Chris Rock that made the interesting point where he's like, men are only appreciated if they can provide. Everybody loves and takes care of women and children. Men only have value as long as they can provide something. The minute they can't provide, they no longer have, you know, they no longer have value. And I think what Jordan Peterson was talking about is, you know, you always have value as long as you give yourself value and you value yourself. So,
yeah. And skill of opening yourself up for that. It's a long way of saying do some more cocky walks at practice.
Dude. I think, you know, I think we've been in a really interesting time because for so long, there's been this kind of standard narrative. And because individuals that controlled that narrative controlled the way that we absorbed information. And now we have this deal, which is like information can be absorbed by anybody who's putting it out because it's so easily digestible. What it's done is it's because of all that noise. I think what we've seen is we've seen interesting people like a Jordan Peterson rise to the top. And what's amazing, having read both of his books, which Mr. McQuilkin provided me on Christmas presents, which thank you, which allowed me to read all Jordan Peterson stuff.
Cheers.
So what's been fascinating to me is you'll hear people be like, oh, he's a white supremacist or a misogynist. And I've heard all these negative pieces. And as an intelligent individual, having read his books and heard him speak and having been there, I'm like, I like to believe empathy is the idea of like, I can put myself in your position to try to see your point of view. One of the first things they teach you in rhetoric is if you want to argue against somebody, the first thing you have to do is walk a mile in their shoes and understand their point of view from their argument. If you understand where that person's coming from, then you can effectively defeat their argument. I can't even fucking see where their shoes are when they say that stuff. I've not heard a single thing like, and then when people be like, oh, he's a piece of shit, like talk shit on him. Like, I mean, he's an intelligent thinker and a thoughtful man. Like, you're going to shit on that guy for that? For what reason? Like, give me something exactly he said.
Do you think it's like an intimidation factor?
I think we're in a really interesting time where I think people don't have the ability to think for themselves. So it's a lot easier just to like digest what the next guy pushes them. And I think people aren't willing to do the work. I think that like if I don't like somebody, it's easier just to not like them for what somebody else said than to dive in and be like, I don't like this guy, but I'm going to figure out why I don't like him. I'm going to read both of his books. I'm going to listen to him talk, and I'm going to read something he's written, I'm going to put myself in the situation to be a fan of this individual to actually give them an honest shake. Like the fact that people like rip on Joe Rogan and they're like, guys, like I would never listen to a podcast. He's a piece of shit. Well, how would you know unless you listen to his podcast? Right. Like I like him as a UFC commentator. I like him. I remember him from Fear Factor. I've heard his stand up. His stand up was good.
And that goes back to being influenced by the people that you surround yourself with the most. Right. If people probably hear a narrative on him or an opinion on him, it's easy just to accept that as truth because your closest friends, your closest people surrounding you are telling you that. So rather than waste any energy to go out and search for yourself and think for yourself, it's easier just to accept it.
So what are some action items that we could sum all this up and have people take away to go think for themselves?
I think you have to go to powerathlete.com or powerathletehq.com/training. I'm fucking up today. So powerathletehq.com/training. And I want you to check out some training programs. And if you're really interested in learning more about how to heal your back and really just improve your performance, you need to go to academy.powerathletehq.com and check out the foot course, the back course, methodology and all this. And if you're really interested in this conversation and you want to inject more, you can always reach out to our hotline, 929-464-464.
Zero.
929-ing-ing.
Zero.
And you can leave us a question on the hotline. You can also reach out to @PowerAthleteHQ on social media, and you can shoot us a DM. I probably won't see it because I don't have access to that account. But if you want to get my opinion on something, @John Wellborn, you can also reach @McQuilkin or @RootedInMovement.
Yes. John, I'm going to throw this out there. I have a blog suggestion for you based off title alone. Clean Your Own Gym by John Wellborn.
Mm. So he was talking about Western Canada, and he was also talking about Northwest Canadian art. And he was talking about like that deal. As you know, through my whole house, because my grandfather, you know, Vancouver, you know, used to sail his boat up and down all through there, up into, you know, past Nanaimo and up into Bowen Island, all that, collected all that stuff. And so when he started talking about Western Canada and especially like that culture, that's always been very near and dear to my heart. So there was just the thing I appreciate about him, thoughtful man, well-dressed, interesting conversation. And the fact that he brought his daughter on to open for him just showed like the fact that he's puts his trust in his family. Very easy could have had other people, but, you know, wanted to put her in that situation and help her along. You know, good on him. I don't think he has any. I think she's his only child.
No, he also has a son. Oh, she's the oldest. Yeah,
she's the oldest. So yeah, good on him, man. But yeah, he has my respect, and I think he was a good excellent opportunity. But I'll tell you, I think 2024, Joe Rogan for president. I'm voting him in. I'm gonna write him in.
Now it's time for you to empower your performance. Head to powerathletehq.com/training to choose from a number of programs to meet your specific performance goals. And if you like to break a mental sweat too, visit academy.powerathletehq.com and become a real stakeholder in you or your athlete's success. Until next time, bye!
Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.